good to see everybody. It's fun in these moments to realize that there's people in the room that I haven't formally met yet. That's fun for me. So if we haven't met yet, my name's Josh Curry, and I'm one of the pastors here. And what I want to do today is just a simple conversation around seasonality in the life of the church. I want to have a simple conversation about some practical areas of leadership. And I think this is really important because we aspire as a church to be an integrated church, and we want to develop integrated leaders, which means we want to be people that are wholehearted in following Jesus, people of relationship, people of warmth, people that cultivate spiritual friendship. We also want to be a church and a people that love God with our strength. We want to love God with execution and with practices that are helpful. And we want to love God with our minds. We want to love God in the realm of truth. We want to be doctrinally driven people, people of the word. And we want to love God with our souls. And that's the realm of meaning. That's the place of mystery. That's where we get the answer to why. And we want all that to be a part of the training that we do as a church. And I'm just mindful that, like, more than in any church I've ever experienced, you get heavy doses of below the line training, which just means, it means heart and soul. You get a lot of stuff on relationship. You get a lot of stuff around renewal. You get a lot of stuff around meaning and mystery and metaphor and picture. And one of the things that can happen is over time, we can start to realize that we're not having some of the important leadership conversations that need to be had about our effectiveness, about our faithfulness, about execution. And so what I want to do today is kind of a bit of a combo. I want to talk to you about discerning what's happening in the life of the church and just being seasonally aware and seasonally wise. I wouldn't go so far as to say that there's four set seasons in the life of the church, and you can always name if we're in fall or winter or summer or spring. I wouldn't say that. But I do think that God has ordered the universe in such a way that it tells us something of the way that God works. And my experience in the last 20 plus years of ministry is that there are seasons in the life of the church, and there's unique temptations and unique beauties in all the seasons. We went through a really painful season of pruning over the last few years. It was a season where the combination of people wilding out and having angry voices raised up against the church, and a season of trying to navigate the pandemic and all the things that that brought to the surface, it felt a bit like winter. And it felt like a time of contraction in the life of our church. And what's fascinating and beautiful is that the Father tells us in Scripture that he prunes us so that we can bear fruit. So those seasons of pruning, those seasons of retraction and even subtraction in the life of the church, those aren't things to be resisted. The only reason that we should resist those things is if we think that our productivity and performance is the root of our identity. And it's not. The finished work of Jesus is, which means that we can receive seasons of winter from God, seasons of demotion from God, seasons where things get smaller, and that's okay. That's okay. That's something that happens in the life of the church. But we're also experiencing in a lot of our congregations, and I suspect probably we're about to experience church-wide, a season of growth in our church. Downtown, it's been really interesting. This has been a few weeks of the most interesting, energetic additions of new people in the life of our church that we've had in maybe 8 years. And we got all kinds of people showing up. We got Christians showing up and non-Christians showing up. We've got people that are sort of midtowners that can actually afford to live here. We've got homeless people showing up, and it's an amazing mix of people. There's growth happening in the life of our church. And what's interesting is we can kind of think that all the temptations and challenges to our leadership just happen in the winter. Like, can you pass the test of criticism? Can you pass the test of pruning? But what's really fascinating is I kind of think maybe some of the hardest tests that we receive of our character and our development of leaders happens when the church is growing, right? It happens when people are being added. It happens when we're tempted to operate out of adrenaline instead of communion with God, or to sort of take our eyes off the most important things and focus more on systems to the exclusion of the heart of God for those systems. And so what I want to do today is just talk about some things that I think I've learned the hard way in a lot of years of church planting. These are lessons that have come out of like stepping on the landmines. And one of the things that's really cool about getting to have had a tenure of 17 years here is that I get to sort of encourage those of you that are maybe new to leadership and say, hey man, you don't have to step on that. Like, you don't have to learn that the hard way. I learned that the hard way. You don't have to do that. Now, I know experience is the best teacher, and you're probably going to step on your own landmines, but I want to be a good spiritual big brother, and I want to try to help you to avoid them where you can. So I want to name a few things for you. And this has been a conversation we've been having downtown, and I would encourage our downtown team members, don't just check out, because I actually think that we've just scratched the surface of the kind of work we need to do as a congregation to be prepared for the season that we're entering into. So when the church is growing, right? When people are coming back, when new people are being added, when you're having to navigate, needing to recruit and train and build a healthy leadership community for 100 kids ministry volunteers. Like, that's amazing. That's larger than the average size church in America. That's wild. When you're having to name the processes of meeting people in the city, moving them to the door of our church through evangelism and meeting them with hospitality, into the core of our church through membership and processes, and then launching them back out into the city through mission, here's the challenges that you're going to find. You're going to find that the more people that get added, the more weight and the more pressure invites us to do some deep work around four categories, right? Four categories. So this is for you as a leader, and you should be taking notes right now. I love that it's usually the people that don't need to take notes that always take notes. Leslie Poe takes notes in all of our meetings, and I'm like, Leslie, you know everything that I'm saying. You could teach this more effectively than me. But Leslie always takes notes because she's curious and she wants to learn. So take notes. Here's the four categories you need to think about. When the church is growing, you need to be mindful, first of all, of the Father's invitation to you as a disciple. You as a disciple. And I want to name the obvious, that's the first thing we forget in ministry. You are a disciple of Jesus before you're a minister of the gospel. And it's so easy to depart from your first love. It's so easy for this to just become a job. It's so easy for the words of Jesus to the church in, I believe, Ephesus, that you've left your first love to become true of us. And I just want to name, when the church is growing and when things are really busy, it's so easy to almost feel like the presence of God is a distraction from the good work we need to get done. And I don't ever want God to be a distraction from us, for us. Like, your first identity as a person is as a son, as a daughter. And what's crazy is when you look at our Savior, when you look at our Master and his 3 years of ministry, everything about it's amazing. But one of the most amazing things is in the midst of all the people that needed to be healed, all the people that needed the good news of the gospel preached to them, all the people that were afflicted, and all of the compassion that Jesus had for them, he still departed. He still would leave people to go be with his Father and spend time in prayer and in communion. And I just want to name, you have to come back again and again and again to the truth in Christian ministry that the first thing to go is the most important thing that you need. And that's a life of communion with God. That's doing ministry from a place of finding your identity in him. That's having spiritual disciplines that we don't just talk about during a really witty 2-month sermon series on Sunday mornings, but that's spiritual disciplines that we incorporate into our life where we're rooting ourselves in the word of God and in prayer and building our lives around the presence of God. And I just want to say, like, we want to be people that we want to smoke what we're selling to God's people. we don't want to be up here on Sundays and in community groups and when we gather with teenagers on Wednesday nights. We don't want to be talking about these things from a place where we're not experiencing these things. We want warm hearts, and we want to put our noses in the book, right? So the first thing is you're a disciple. And when the church grows, you need to explicitly come back to a recommitment around hearing the voice of your Heavenly Father through his word, through prayer and worship and study and silence and solitude and times of fasting and the disciplines that form you over the long haul. That's number one. The second invitation is, after being a disciple, you're called to lead. You're called to lead. And when the church grows, here's what we find. Almost every time you experience growth in ministry, there's an invitation from God to grow as a leader. And it's really difficult. It's really difficult for the ministry that you lead or for the people that you lead to outpace your growth and development as a leader. And so if you're not growing as a leader, I mean, think of it as the engine of a train, right? As the engine of a train, like the rest of the cars of the train are not going to go faster than the engine. And one of the things I find that happens a lot in leadership is that there's a lot of leaders that are just trying to run the race based on the calories that they consumed like a year ago. And what I want to say is in a busy season of ministry, your caloric intake needs to match your caloric output in leadership. Do you guys understand what I mean by that? Like, has anybody ever bonked doing endurance sports? Kinzer, have you ever bonked? Tell me of this thing. So, I mean, when you burn through all the carbs in your body, that's a really scary place to be. It's a really scary place to be. It's a really dark place to be. You need to be in a long training session. You need to be putting the fuel in your body so that you can get to the end of the race. And you kind of want like a good measure when you're doing endurance sports, a good measure of you getting your nutrition right is that you're not starving when you get finished. So if you do your long run or you do your long ride and you get to the end and you're like, hey, I'm dying. I need to go crush 7 pizzas. Like, I mean, that's like the point of training. Yes, you can crush 7 pizzas, but you should have been eating during the race. You should have been putting in the calories that your body is burning. And I think this happens for leaders. So you got to do your work to develop and grow as a leader. This means ongoing coaching, right? It's a cliche, but it's really important. Leaders should be readers. And I'm not saying that everybody has the same appetite for reading. I'm not saying that everybody reads at the same pace. And man, like if audiobooks is the best way for you to learn, it's great. That's not cheating. But you as a leader need to take responsibility for your development and growth in seasons of growth, right? Don't get to the place where you're burning calories that you consumed 2 years ago. That's a sad place to be as a leader. And if you need help thinking through a development plan, we have a culture of development. So there's tons of people in here that could come alongside you. This includes deep reading so that you can grow theologically. This includes the kind of reading that sometimes is a real challenge. Like the hard books that you don't fully understand, but they make you better even if you don't understand it all. It includes the kind of reading that you need to do to understand our cultural moment. What's happening in society, what's happening in culture, the kind of reading and learning that you need to do to become a better leader of systems and people. So you need to take responsibility as a leader in these seasons to keep developing and growing, to not rest on yesterday's understanding, but to keep hearing from God. Does this make sense? Yeah. You develop as a leader. And here's what I've found a lot of times. A lot of times when the church has grown, I've felt the pain of that growth and the stretching of that growth, and I immediately want to find sort of an external solution to make the pain go away. Like I want a hack, I want a new technology, I want a new ministry or a new structure to make it better. And here's what I found, man. Almost every time I'm experiencing pain because what I'm leading and serving has grown, it's an invitation for me to first grow and catch up. So, number one, it's an invitation to be a disciple. Number two, it's an invitation to develop as a leader. Number three, when the church is growing, it's an invitation to think team. To think team. Okay, I want to just remind you of like Ephesians 4 ministry, which is the heartbeat of our church. That the point of ministers is not that we get to do all the ministry, it's that we get to equip the saints for the work of ministry. The joy of ministry is not making ourselves the linchpin that everything is hinging on, that we have to do it all. The joy of ministry is coming alongside people and developing them and helping them grow and helping them do their work so that they can share in the joy of our Father's business. And so team is really fascinating. When the church is growing, what I find leaders do pretty frequently is they just start over-functioning instead of growing their teams. And then they get grumpy and they get burned out and they get angry. Or they realize that they need teams, so they just start, instead of delegating, they just start dumping stuff on people. Here, you take this. But they haven't coached, and they don't really train people to know what it is that we're asking them to do, and they don't set clear expectations. So what I want to say is when the church is growing, one of the most powerful things that you can realize is that your team is insufficient for what God's doing in the life of the church. And that is That is an amazing invitation from God to see people through the lens of partnership in the gospel. That we get to recruit more people and develop more people, and more people get to share in the joy of gospel ministry. So the team needs to grow. Then the third thing, and it is in this order, the fourth thing that you'll find is that in seasons of growth, the systems that you're working in need to grow. Things that worked when you had 50 kids volunteers will break and cause you nightmares when you have 100 kids volunteers. The way that you did oversight and care of community groups when you had 12 community groups is not going to function when you have 35 community groups. And a youth ministry of 20 can't have the systems in place to make sure that we're doing diligence, to make sure that child protection policies are in place, that it's safe, that it's hospitable. Like, if you have the same systems in place when you have 50 students as you did when you had 20 students, everything's going to break and you're going to start hating your life. So we have to do the work to not just work in our ministry, but you have to do the work to work on your ministry, which means sometimes you have to pull back from the fray so that you can see the forest and the trees. Are you with me? So of those four things, almost every time you experience growth, more people are showing up. In fact, let me just read this. I love this proverb. This is such a great picture of growth. This is Proverbs 14, verse 4. Where there are no oxen, the manger is clean. Isn't it great to walk into a clean manger, not get doo-doo on your shoes? But abundant crops come by the strength of the ox, which means if life is happening, if growth is happening, if renewal and revival is happening, there's going to be oxen droppings all over the place. You're going to have to shovel, and it's going to create chaos and messes and challenges. And when you're experiencing in the life of your ministry a lot of messes, sometimes the reason you're experiencing those messes is because God's doing a work of revival and renewal. And if you just study the history of renewals, we're not currently in a revival or a renewal, but we're praying big prayers and asking God to do that again. And here's what you find when you study the history of revivals and renewals. It's crazy. Crazy people come out of the woodwork. Church discipline cases spike, like all kinds of wild difficulties and challenges to relationships start to surface. Criticism exponentially increases. Spiritual warfare increases. It gets bonkers when renewal and revival happens. So I want you to think through those four categories, and I want you to think, where do you feel like your greatest invitation as a person is right now? In your ministry, of those four categories, where do you need to grow the most? And by the way, where do you need to take the most responsibility that it's not somebody else's job to do the work for you to grow in that area, but it's your responsibility? So of those four, where do you need to do the most work to grow right now? Is discipleship on lock and you're feeling like you're enjoying communion with God and you have time with God's word, but then the systems of what you lead are really chaotic and immature and sort of juvenile compared to where they should be? They lack elegance. They lack clarity. Where do you need to grow? And this leads to the second category. Second category is here are the dangers. All right, here are the dangers. Those are the invitations. Here are the dangers. When the church is growing, when your ministry is growing, when new people are being added, the first danger is usually going to be around disunity. Disunity. The enemy loves to divide. And in seasons of life and growth, one of the greatest strategies of the enemy is to try to get us to lower the drawbridge from the inside. And the most powerful way that we can destroy what's happening that's really beautiful is through disunity with one another. And what can start to happen when the church is growing is we can start to feel exhausted and overworked. And we can start to build narratives and stories about our fellow laborers in the gospel that are not charitable and not true. We can start to assume the worst. And what can start to happen is we start to operate almost like machines that are just widgets in the machine, and we're just getting stuff done. And we can neglect the relational framework that we're supposed to do ministry in. So when the church is growing, we have to guard our unity. We have to be vigilant to guard our unity. So let me put it to you in the framework of a question. Where do you feel tempted to believe a story about somebody in this room that's less than charitable? Where do you need to do some work today to keep short accounts with the people that you're doing ministry with? I mean, isn't it amazing? Like, think about all the moments in the ministry of Jesus where the disciples, it was all busy and chaotic and people are coming to faith and it's just wild and miracles are happening. But we see again and again, they get sideways with each other. They get sideways and they're believing narratives that are not true about themselves and they're believing narratives that are not true about one another. And Jesus keeps bringing them back again and again and again to the importance of bearing with one another in grace and in love. Disunity. The second one is the neglect of your family. Neglect of your family. Now, I want to hold attention here because what a lot of people can do is they can learn true things about Sabbath rhythms with God, and they can then use that as an excuse to become lazy. And that can happen even in a good theology of the family. We can learn that your family is your first ministry, and then you can build these impenetrable barriers around your family, and you can stop actually doing gospel ministry. So I'm saying all this in the reality that we're called to give our lives away, right? And we're called to work really hard, and we're called to go to bed tired at night. But let me just say, when the church gets really busy and the church is growing, it can feel more affirming to do the somewhat easier work of sharing the gospel with people in the church than the much harder work of seeing the gospel be central to the way that you're loving your wife's heart, or the gospel being central to the way that you're taking time to develop and disciple your kids. And man, I'll tell you, it's for all my friends in the room that have little babies, little kids and toddlers. I know it sounds so cliche, and I was there too. I wanted to roll my eyes whenever an old person would tell me, oh, it goes by so fast. And it's like, well, I wish this would go by fast because diapers suck and three-year-olds are terrible people. But listen, like we just yesterday, we sent our youngest kid, we launched our youngest kid out yesterday. And it was a blur, man. The last 21 years of parenting has gone by at warp speed. It is so fast and it's over so quickly. And I just want to say, like, man, I don't regret a single time that I intentionally prioritize my family. I don't regret a single date with my wife. I don't regret a single moment where I pulled away from the busyness up here to go after the hearts of my two kids. I don't regret any of the vacation time that I took over the last 17 years. I regret the vacation time that I left on the table. I don't regret the nights where I could have gone and done other stuff and we got to break bread together as a family. I don't regret any of that stuff. And you won't regret that stuff. So remember, your spouse is your first ministry. And if you have kids, your kids are right there with your spouse as so important and so central to what it means to be a minister of the gospel. Don't neglect that. You'll get a lot of stuff wrong as a mom, as a dad, as a husband, as a wife. You'll get a lot of stuff wrong. You'll make your mistakes. You'll blow it. But part of the good news of the gospel is that the places that you fail your kids just point to their need for a savior and a better father. And that's all going to happen for everybody in the room. You're not going to get it perfect. But you can aim to get it right. And the last thing you want is for your kids to grow up resenting the church because mom or dad neglected the family for the idol of ministry. And the last thing you want is for your wife to feel like the church is your mistress, or for your husband to feel like the church is more important to you than he is. Right? Don't do that. When it gets busy, it's a great time to reset and say, hey man, in the midst of the fray, I want to prioritize, I want to aim at the kind of relational framework in the home that reflects the goodness of Jesus. The little church of the home is as important as the big church of what we get to participate in on Sunday mornings. It's just as important. All right, and then the last one I'll mention, the last danger. And this one, I kind of hesitate to even mention this because it kind of feels unhelpful, but I think I need to say it. And it's just poor judgment. And developing good, wise judgment, if there was like one training that would do that, we would just do that training every Tuesday. But we haven't found that training yet. And here's what I find happens. When things get busy and chaotic and the church is moving really fast and new people are being added and the systems are being strained and we need more workers, we need more volunteers, we need more group leaders, we need more student leaders, what can start to happen is people just start making dumb calls. And it's the whole spectrum, right? It's like there's bad judgment calls that are no big deal, the kind of judgment calls that we get it wrong and it's like, well, we'll fix it on the back end and it kind of creates a small mess, no big deal. And then there's the epic, really bad judgment calls. Installing a person that doesn't have proven character in a place in the church where they can damage God's people. And I've made both kinds of bad judgment calls. I've made a billion of the little bad judgment calls that were no big deal and we learn from it and move forward. And I've made the really big bad judgment calls where out of the pain of ministry and growth, I've laid hands on people too quickly, or I've been not as discerning as I should have been when my gut was like, hey, something seems weird there or off there. And I'm like, well, I'll get to that later. And those kind of judgment calls can really hurt you. So how do you develop good judgment? Well, part of it is when things are busy, we all get tempted to silo into our ministry and to just sort of be more autonomous. And I just want to encourage you that it's in the abundance of counsel that wise plans for war are made. And one of the things that you can do to avoid making bad judgment calls is just asking people to check your work. Hey man, am I thinking of this the right way? Right? I'm thinking of making this change in the ministry. Does this seem wise to you? And when it comes to having people check your work, I think it's important to mention expertise matters here. Just getting a bunch of peers. Like I remember in my 20s, I was a part of a community group. We got married at 20, and we were in this community group full of other people that were all in their 20s, and we were all giving each other marriage advice. It just was bad. It just wasn't helpful. No, nobody got helped in that. It was really bad. I probably gave the worst advice of anybody. You actually need some people that are a little further down the line than you to check your work. And I just want to encourage you to cultivate the kind of humility that's not threatened by people checking your work. In fact, like here's the best leaders I know. One of the things I love about working with David, and all of our lead pastors do this, but it's especially David. David is the most exemplary when it comes to this. David has loads of expertise as a lead pastor. David's wise. David is a great leader. David and the Edmund team have just unbelievable amounts of leadership horsepower and gifting on their team. And David is so quick to not be threatened, but to just ask his fellow pastors to check his work. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's a change I think I should make. Here's an idea that I've got. Here's a hard call that I have to make about leadership or church discipline. What do you guys think? And I've found over the years that I've never regretted getting feedback and advice from people that I trust and from people that have good judgment. And when things get busy and things are moving really fast, what we want to try to do as leaders is just slow. You want to slow the game down just enough, to use a sports metaphor. You want to slow the game down just enough to be able to make the right call. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting is as you look at like high school football to college football, then to the NFL, the biggest jump, because, I mean, you're putting on strength at every level of the game, but the biggest jump from those three levels is the speed of the game. And a really good player has the ability to mentally figure out how to slow the game down enough so that they can make the right call in the moment, so that they can hit the right angle. And I want us to cultivate as a leadership team the ability to slow the game down a little bit, where you can check your work, you can breathe, you can pull back. You don't have to make knee-jerk reactions. It's okay to pull back from a meeting and say, hey man, I don't know what the right call is. I'm gonna get some feedback and then we're gonna reconvene. Like you can slow it down a bit so that you can make the right call. Okay? So praise be to God. Like, listen, the Father holds this church, and Jesus is the head of this church, and we don't know what tomorrow holds. If Jesus wants this church to go away and that brings him the most glory, kill it tomorrow, Lord. Kill it tomorrow. Like, it's his. And you know, I promise you, you're not going to have your identity issues and your idols and your places of brokenness and wounds that you carry inside of you. None of that stuff's ever going to get fixed by more people being added. It's just not. Like you're going to be just as jacked up if we added another 200 people, because that doesn't fix anything that's wrong with us. Yeah. Trust me. I thought if I planted a church and it grew, then all the places of brokenness and angst and immaturity in my life would just get fixed because I would arrive and succeed. And we've hit every marker, every number I ever dreamed of and more. And none of that stuff is fixed. Anything inside my chest, I've had to do other work to address those things. So Jesus holds the church and he can do whatever he wants to do. And, you know, he might choose to shrink us tomorrow. We might go through another season of pruning. We might have a huge exodus. We got a few texts in 1 Corinthians that could be conducive to a lot of people leaving. But my sense is that we are in a season where God is adding people and new people are showing up. And I want us to be able to just name that. I want us to name that. And I want you to look at your life as a disciple, as a leader, as a team member, and the systems that you're responsible for. And try to discern, where's God inviting you to do some deeper work to grow? Maybe you need a personal development plan. Maybe you realize that the gap is theological growth. Maybe you're getting more formed by culture than good doctrine. And you need to grab a couple of our guys and say, hey, man, help me. How do I need to read this year? But whatever it is that you need, I can almost guarantee you that the tools are in this room to blow up a lot of roadblocks and to help you hear the invitation when the church is growing and to not get stuck. And that thing about discipleship, here's what's interesting. When the church is growing, we will almost always be tempted to lead out of our gifting instead of leading out of devotion and character. And man, gifting matters. Gifting's amazing. But like the goal is to not just build a platform for you in whatever ministry that you lead, I hope. Because platforms are, they're a double-edged sword, right? Platforms give and platforms take. The goal is to finish the race, which means that we want to actually lead from a place of devotion and deepening character. And we want, if God gives you a big platform or a tiny platform, we want that platform to not be destructive to you or the church because you've done the character work as a disciple. Because you're leading out of devotion, not just good ideas. Okay, let's stop there and open it up. If anybody else has anything you want to add, or if there's any questions about any of this, like this could be a great moment to just sort of do some practical leadership conversations. Or if anything stuck out in your mind that you want us to camp out on, let's open it up.
Josh, I was thinking about how in that second point about call to lead and personal development plans and stuff. One thing that I'm realizing that created a pretty big roadblock in my life as a leader is not doing that deep work until like my story. And, you know, family of origin, that kind of stuff, that those things really come to the surface whenever the church is known and busy and moving real fast. And so can you speak to that for just a second, like the importance of this, you know, ideas behind how to do that?
Yeah, hey, so there's an interesting book written by a guy named David Brooks called, I think it's called Second Mountain.
Yeah.
And here's the argument of the book. It's really fascinating. What he argues for is that the first mountain is the ascent up to the pinnacle of career success and family success that we kind of chase in the early part of life. So it's becoming a capable person. It's growing your capacity. It's growing your influence in the world. And then what he argues is that almost all leaders have a second mountain journey, and the second mountain is more connected to depth. It's connected to finishing well. It's when those family of origin things start to pop up. Here's what's really interesting about Acts 29. Acts 29 was kind of exclusively a first mountain network. And then we had the first generation of guys kind of blow up. And then it started leaning into kind of second mountain conversations. But the thing that's really tricky is like you have to go up the first mountain. You can't skip the first mountain. You can't be in your 20s and be like, hey, I'm just going to be a spiritual guru, because it's actually the pain of the first mountain that helps you prepare to do the work of the second mountain. So I think the reason I'm bringing that up is because here's what you're going to find throughout your journey in leadership. You're going to be doing your best. You're going to be living in the light you have today, which is all any of us can do. And then stuff's going to break. Stuff's going to go wrong. Suffering's going to happen. Relationships are going to fray. Patterns in your life are going to crop up that you're going to be concerned about. Sadness, depression, like something's going to happen in your life. And you don't have to ahead of time have a plan for that. You just have to respond to it by saying yes to the Spirit of God when it happens. And so if you're realizing, oh man, like I'm realizing that there's deep work that needs to be done in my marriage. Okay, well, let's figure out how to do the deep work. Just say yes. Or hey, man, I'm realizing that there's patterns in my life that are connected to family of origin. Well, okay, let's just say yes. Let's just figure out how to do the work. You don't have to have a game plan ahead of time for how to do the work. You just have to be willing and have the courage and the guts to say yes when it pops up. In the midst of regular life, in the midst of working your job and growing your capacity, and like that's not bad. You need to climb your first mountain, right? But you need to climb the first mountain in a way that's mindful of the fact that that's not the end-all, be-all, and actually that's going to be the arena that God uses to chasten you and refine you and grow you and do all kinds of stuff in your life that you didn't see coming when you started out. Yeah, man, you need peer coaches. So you need some people that are doing the same kind of work as you that you love and respect and that you create some space around learning. You need some people that are further down the road that you can consult. The myth of the one-size-fit-all, end-all, be-all, singular mentor is a dumb myth. That person usually doesn't exist. What you're going to find is that you need multiple mentors at different stages of life that have different areas of expertise. So you don't have to find one person that's the guru that's going to be your go-to for ministry, for theology, for practical leadership, for systems, and for navigating parenting. Like, you don't have to do that. You can have three or four different people throughout the course of 5 years that really have something important to say that you pursue and seek wisdom from. The other thing that's important about this is with the whole input thing, man, I want to encourage you, especially those of you that are ministry leaders. I'm thinking of Leslie as our women's ministry director downtown and our youth directors and our kids directors. Hey, you guys need to know our hope, expectation, and belief in you is so high that we're expecting you to not just manage what you kind of inherited. We're expecting you guys to shape the conversation about what faithfulness looks like for the next decade, which means we're actually asking you guys to grow, to become experts in the area of ministry that you're leading and serving in. I long for the day, man, where we've got a whole, and I think we have this and we've grown in this. I think you and Matt and some of our other folks involved in youth ministry are doing this for us, but like the ability to say, hey man, here's what I'm learning about how kids learn and grow. Here's what I'm learning about historic practices of catechesis for young people. Here's what I'm learning about a survey of youth ministry for the last 20 years and what worked and what didn't work. Here's what I think could be really faithful to historic orthodoxy and also innovative in our cultural moment. So like, I think sometimes you can be in a church like Frontline and you cannot be aware of how many people are learning from and growing from the things that are happening here. And we can kind of feel like, well, if this is just what we do and we're just trying to get it done. Actually, like my expectations of our youth directors and youth pastors is that you're helping shape conversations even for other churches, that you're learning and doing the work to grow and to read and to think, and you're even leading up. So you're showing up and talking to elders and saying, hey man, here's three or four things that I think we need to add or adjust in youth ministry to see the kind of students that we want to see when they graduate our program. And just apply that to every ministry. Like,
yeah. And I think, Josh, I think one of the important things about intergenerational ministry is that in Shawnee, of course, everyone's younger than we are. So a lot of our friends are younger and stuff, but I tell Ben all the time, when I quit learning from my residents and interns, I need to quit. I'm not being attentive to the culture and things around me when I quit learning from those, not only who are older, but when I quit learning from those who are younger.
Yep. Yeah, just a posture of being a lifelong learner is essential to leadership. Continuing to offer God your yes when he wants to have the deeper, below the line, heart, soul conversations with you. Continuing to posture yourself for that. And then you do need some subject matter experts that are in your life. Some people that grow you and that know more than you and can shape you and help you think deeply. I get concerned about the death of expertise in our culture and how that's connected to committee-driven ministry. And I think part of it's a generational thing. I get concerned for a lot of our young leaders that the trap could be that you put a committee together, and then you do this, and you ask them what the felt needs are, and even the term felt needs kind of makes me vomit in my mouth a little bit. I just think that's the culture that we are surrounded by, and I do want you to be able to learn from anybody. I want you to be teachable and humble, but I also think you got to be thinking, okay, I'm doing this ministry. Who are the people that are subject matter experts that are further down the road, and how do I tap them in to catalyze and to help me think differently and help me think more clearly? I want that for you guys. And you even have the ability to think outside of our church. So, like, I mean, it's one of the biggest gifts in my life over the last 7 years has been being a part of a lead pastor cohort full of guys that push me like crazy. And I learn from those guys all the time. I get books and ideas, and I mean, what we're doing with Counterformation came out of a conversation I had in Bentonville with those guys like 5 years ago. So take time for that, look for that. And it may not be formalized at every stage of ministry that's in the room right now, but you can be looking for that.
How have you discerned the difference between, is this a me area that needs to grow, or is this a systems organization thing that needs to grow, or both?
I think my default now is I always start with how do I need to grow? And then I want to have the conversation about systems and adjustment and all that, but not just to make the pain go away. Like, I feel like there's a reason why in the ministries that I oversee, there's a reason why I created the particular systems that I created. And without me developing, growing, thinking in a different way, I'm probably not going to be able to adjust even those systems in a way that's going to be fruitful.
I would only add something broken about me going into my 30s was I thought that I would reach a place that would plane out at some point. And the biggest and best revelation for me, even in my growth as a man in the world, in leadership, in Jesus, in friendship, was that the stuff you're talking about doesn't stop.
Yeah.
It just keeps going, and new invitations come. New invitations to grow as a disciple, to follow Jesus in our communion, in leadership, in our growth. And I'm at a place now where I've received that, I understand it, I'm accepting it, and I'm excited that it doesn't end.
Yeah.
As opposed to when it first hit me, I was like, this never ends. Like, you know, okay, man, this never ends. Like, I wanna be an old man that's just more and more full of shalom and life and wisdom and friendship and laughter that comes from being a disciple of Jesus and a friend and a leader. And so so as opposed to it never ends, I just want to say to you guys, hey, it never ends. Like, this
is
exciting.
That's right. And you know, that reminds me of like two things that sort of define a lifelong learner. Two traits that define a lifelong learner are going to be hunger and curiosity. I don't know how to comprehend a person that leads that's not hungry to grow. I just don't understand that. And I don't know how to do a talk on how to find that. So I think that's part of it, is like a posture of the heart where you got one life to live. You've got this high, amazing calling that should translate to real hunger to do everything you can do for the glory of God with your one life. And that hunger should then be connected to curiosity, where it's like, you want to grow, you want to get better. I mean, I don't understand, like, why would anybody in the room want to be flat from where you are today in 1 year? I want to know new stuff. I want to experience new stuff. I want to learn more stuff. I want to think better, and I want to be more effective at what God's called me to do in a year. So I just would encourage you, pursue those two things. Pursue curiosity, pursue hunger. Sometimes you also just have to get, like, the way that you do that, sometimes you just need to, like, pinch yourself and be like, oh, I get to do gospel ministry. Yeah. You know? It's like, I mean, every job matters. I'm not trying to go back to like a Roman Catholic idea of, you know, of clergy versus laity. I'm just saying there's something really special and unique that you get to be in here on a Tuesday. You ought to be kind of stoked about that. You ought to have stuff to write notes with. You ought to have questions in hand when we show up on Tuesday. You ought to be here like with a motor that's running. There's a lot of people that would trade seats with you in our church. I'm not saying that like to make you feel anxious and insecure. Right?
Bring in the keyhole.
Yeah. We're not about to do a draft. Like this isn't preseason. Are you going to make special teams? But I posture myself like that. I know that if I don't keep growing and learning, God will find someone else to do my job. And I don't want him to have to do that.